Hello. Welcome to Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm your volunteer reader, Deborah McFadder from Flagstaff, reading you excerpts from Yes Media, a nonprofit independent publisher of solutions journalism. Through rigorous reporting on the positive ways communities are responding to social problems and insightful commentary that sparks constructive discourse, Yes Media inspires people to build a more just, sustainable, and compassionate world. We begin today with this section of news. This article, Insulin Should Be a Right, Not a Privilege, is part of a series called Progress 2025. The writer is Sarah Youngblood Gregory, first published January 29, 2025. The illustration is a color photograph at the beginning. It shows a young African-American woman with very dark brown curly hair wearing a gray t-shirt, and she has part of it pulled up as she gives herself an injection in her abdomen. She is looking down towards that area of her body. Even before President Trump's victory in the 2024 election, he had his eyes on the Inflation Reduction Act. In September 2023, Trump stated his desire to rescind all unspent funds for the ambitious law passed under President Biden in 2022 and best known for its climate policies. Then, on January 20th, 2025, Inauguration Day, Trump wasted no time issuing an executive order to pause IRA funding. Confusingly, this action is referred to as terminating the Green New Deal, which was a different piece of legislation from 2019. Legal experts speculate that in practice it will be much harder for the Trump administration to actually pull back funding. But the IRA doesn't just tackle climate. It represents a wide-reaching grab bag of progressive policies addressing everything from carbon emissions and health care to tax codes and the economy. It's worth noting that the link to the comprehensive overview of the IRA that I used for my reporting back in December has since been removed from whitehouse.gov. Often considered a landmark achievement of the Biden administration, the IRA includes, among other policies, an ambitious set of initiatives for clean energy jobs, funding for climate resiliency infrastructure and disaster relief, and more aggressive taxation for large corporations. But perhaps one of the most important, if under-discussed, aspects of the IRA is its impact on prescription medication costs. At a time when nearly 40% of Americans have opted to forego prescription medication due to the expense, the IRA gave the government the ability to curb rising drug costs through a variety of strategies. Most notably, the law gave Medicare the power to negotiate prescription prices directly with drug companies for the first time, which could have a cumulative long-term impact on drug prices. The IRA has given the government for the first time the ability and also the tools through which it can negotiate drug prices, says Richard G. Frank, director of the Center on Health Policy at the Brookings Institute, a nonpartisan research organization. This ability ramps up over time, allowing a set number of additional drugs to be negotiated each year. That really changes the ballgame in an important way, not so much today or even tomorrow, but over time, you've equipped the government with a whole bunch of new opportunities to keep prices in check. As far as immediate price reductions, the IRA also guarantees that many Medicare beneficiaries will pay no more than $35 out of pocket for insulin. This price cap is not only a practical win for people on Medicare, but a symbolic victory for many activists who have long lobbied to make predatory insulin and drug pricing a national concern for politicians. In recent years, insulin has become a poster child for the broken healthcare system. By manipulating patent law and squashing competitors, a mere three pharmaceutical companies control an estimated 90% of the global insulin market, and this monopoly has given them free rein to crank up the price of insulin over the past few decades. A recent study from the Healthcare Cost Institute found that from 2012 to 2021, the price of a 30-day supply of insulin nearly doubled from $271 to $499. The estimated cost of manufacturing a vial of insulin, meanwhile, is only $2 to $4. When compared to international prices, insulin in the United States is 8 times more expensive, per a 2020 report published by the Assistant Secretary for Planning and Evaluation. For many, these discrepancies are particularly outrageous. Without insulin, people with diabetes can die within days. It's unclear exactly how Trump's executive order will affect the IRA's climate initiatives, let alone how or if it could have any effect on other aspects of the law, such as insulin price caps. But just a few years after Biden signed the IRA into law, it is clear that its benefits are under threat. Project 2025, a harrowing authoritarian wish list published by the Heritage Foundation and meant to guide the next Republican presidency, calls for the repeal of the IRA. Republicans, too, are already pushing for a complete repeal of the IRA and its so-called woke agenda, including its climate provisions and tax increases for corporations. Republicans' continued distaste for the IRA is not surprising, however, as every single Republican in Congress voted against the bill. But that partisanship does not extend beyond the halls of Congress. The majority of Americans, regardless of political affiliation, support government-negotiated drug prices. The main goal of Project 2025's repeal is to strip Medicare of its power to negotiate with corporations, according to Andrea Duca, Vice President of Health Policy at the Center for American Progress, a nonpartisan policy institute. To achieve that goal, they're willing to undo progress and throw prescription drug affordability into jeopardy for everyone in Medicare, Duca says. By and large, Project 2025, this mandate for leadership, is grounded in a worldview that prioritizes profits, corporations, and business over people. Full stop. In short, Project 2025's IRA repeal would throw the baby out with the bathwater. In order to maintain corporate monopolies and profits, Americans would lose out on an insulin price cap, healthcare savings, climate initiatives, clean energy jobs, and a whole lot more. Yet even with the IRA currently in place and a general consensus from voters that healthcare and insulin prices are simply overwhelming for most Americans, people with diabetes still struggle to afford their insulin on a day-to-day basis. In 2021 alone, more than 1 million Americans were forced to ration their life-saving insulin, with Black Americans, the uninsured, and those too young to qualify for Medicare being the most vulnerable to rationing. Clearly, the IRA represents only one step on a much longer journey toward equitable health care access. But health advocates, grassroots organizers, and people living with diabetes continue to lead the way in advocating for a future where accessible insulin is a reality for all. Insulin policies for all. While the IRA is an achievement, it's important to understand its limits. The IRA grants a copay price cap for certain Medicare beneficiaries, not a holistic price cap. This difference is an important one, according to Shayna Casper, executive director of T1 International, a grassroots nonprofit run for and by people with diabetes. The $35 copay limits monthly out-of-pocket expenses for certain people with Medicare, but it does nothing to regulate the actual list price of insulin, the initial price of a drug set by pharmaceutical manufacturers before any rebates, discounts, negotiations, or insurance kicks in. As a result, Casper says people without Medicare, premium insurance plans, or any healthcare coverage are still left in the lurch. It should be noted that the IRA initially did include a $35 copay cap for those with private insurance, not just Medicare recipients, but it was shot down by Republican lawmakers. Our goal is an absolute price cap and lowering that list price of insulin to make sure that it's affordable and accessible to all, says Casper. Together, Casper says, lowered list prices and copay caps would impact the full spectrum of people in need, including those with private insurance, those without insurance, and those with Medicare benefits. Even without a full price cap, however, the IRA did play an important role in pressuring all three insulin giants to announce their own price caps or reduced list prices for some insulin products, an important, if incomplete, step toward affordability. But affordability and accessibility aren't always the same thing when it comes to medications. The fact that insulin and diabetes supplies need to be prescribed also means added barriers. Tracy Ramey, leader of the Ohio Insulin for All chapter and T1 International organizer, has recently helped pass an updated version of Kevin's Law in her state, which grants pharmacists the ability to dispense an emergency supply of a chronic maintenance drug without a prescription. The law was named after 36-year-old Kevin Hodeschel, who died during the holidays in 2014 after being turned away from a pharmacy and unable to contact his doctor for an insulin refill. The impact of Kevin's Law is immediate, even for Ramey's own daughter who has type 1 diabetes. While Ramey was between jobs and waiting for Medicaid to kick in, her daughter was still able to get her supplies, even after a prescription had run out. I'm very proud that my daughter was able to benefit from that as well, Ramey said. Since 2016, 26 states have passed some version of Kevin's Law, but Casper says expanding the law is an important way to ensure equitable access to health care across the country. Taken together, these policies, universal price caps, lower list prices, and an expanded scope of practice for pharmacists would add much-needed guardrails for people struggling to afford and access their medications. You are tuned to Sun Sounds of Arizona, listening to excerpts from Yes Media. Insulin access on the ground. However well-crafted or impactful a potential policy may be, people urgently need insulin access here and now. To fill in the gaps, communities across the country are creating their own mutual aid networks. We can't sit and wait forever for someone else to save us. It's just not going to happen, says Brandon Lopez, founder of the Embrace Foundation, a nonprofit volunteer-run organization in Arizona that sends free diabetic supplies to people who need it. Who knows? Maybe a policy will pass or something will change where healthcare will be free. But until then, it's our job as a community to take care of each other. The Embrace Foundation has its roots in Lopez's own healthcare experiences. In 2017, Lopez was working full-time, living without health insurance, and struggling to afford his insulin. With bills, rent, cost of living, I had no money for diabetic supplies, which added up to almost $1,000 a month. I simply couldn't afford it, says Lopez, who has type 1 diabetes. For months, I didn't test my blood sugar once. I couldn't afford the strips. I took insulin when I felt high and ate something when I felt low, completely in the dark. I spread out what insulin I had, skipped meals, took half doses, and reused the same bag of dull pen needles I had over and over, completely unsanitary and unsafe. To get by, Lopez described how he sold whatever possessions he could and spent days going from hospital to hospital, practically begging for insulin. Eventually, Lopez landed a better job that provided health insurance, but he continued building an ad hoc insulin supply sharing network on social media, where he connected people experiencing insulin insecurity to a growing inventory of donated supplies. In 2018, Lopez formally launched the Embrace Foundation, and nearly 7 years later, says it has expanded to 19 volunteers, 3 storage units of supplies, and more than 2,500 people served across the country. According to Lopez, the majority of supply requests come from people who don't qualify for insurance, college students who may have aged out of their parents' insurance, and people who are out of work. But plenty of people with insurance still can't afford their supplies. It's either have insurance with a copay or pay more than $600 to live, says Lopez. This month, we had a woman reach out that was a single mother with 3 children and was rationing her supplies so she could keep the power on and feed her family. We've set her up to where she will receive a package from us every month so that she can have one less thing to worry about. Lopez says the Embrace Foundation is meant to continue the legacy of Frederick Banting, the Canadian researcher and doctor who discovered insulin in the early 1920s. Banting sold the patent for insulin for $1, saying, "Insulin does not belong to me, it belongs to the world," Lopez says. We will always stay true to that. About the author, Sarah Youngblood Gregory is a journalist, editor, and author. She covers identity, power, culture, and health. In addition to being a Yes contributor, Youngblood Gregory's work has been featured in the New York Times, New York Magazine, The Guardian, Cosmopolitan, and many others. Most recently, they were the recipient of the 2025 Curve and NLGIA Award for Emerging Journalists. Get in touch at saragregory.org. Sarah is spelled S-A-R-A. Moving next to the opinion section, this article is Murmurations, Dawn of a New Beginning by Adrienne Marie Brown, first published January 30th, 2025. The drawing has a black background with what appears to be a spider's web drawn over the whole expanse of black. But in the middle of the web is a butterfly. The butterfly has a black body. The wings are a combination of an orangey color and rust, and then a little bit of green trim on the outside of the butterfly's wings with orangey colored dots on those wings. There are also flowers drawn into this web, some that look almost like mums and some that look like a kind of lily. And they are done in white with a little bit of red or pink and green leaves that swirl all around the web. At the very top of the web is part of a moon, and at the bottom is a star. Dear beloved Murmurations readers, I am writing with an exciting update about this column. Since we launched Murmurations in 2021, we have collectively survived, witnessed, and lost loved ones, species, and land to floods, drought, fires, tornadoes, hurricanes, pandemics, genocide, a rise in fascism, and so many variations of cancer and disease. We're also enduring the ongoing violence of late-stage capitalism that shows up as institutional violence, denied health care, trigger-happy police, identity-based violence, and increasing economic disparity and insecurity. As all of these crises unfold around our precious globe, we are learning to persist in the work of living. We can simultaneously feel the end of the world as we've known it and the beginning of what will be shaped by us. Though it's looking dire, I am constantly reminded by friends, comrades, Octavia Butler, and historians that these are the conditions from which we have to make our way to lives worth living. We are at the beginning. Right now, I mostly feel a sense of devastating loss, but as the smoke clears, I know we will relearn what is lost and where there are opportunities to survive. I began this column because I was feeling overwhelmed by what the pandemic had unveiled to us about how hard it was to protect each other and about how much we need each other. I wanted to call on the wisdom of Murmuration, moving together with adequate space and proximity, avoiding predation by being in right relationship. For humans to be in right relationship, we must practice accountability, being intentional about how we take up space and resources, attending to our role in the world and our impact on others, shaping what we can touch, and being able to repair and set boundaries, especially as conditions change. After a year of exploring these themes in this column, also collected in Loving Corrections, I opened Murmurations up to other emergent strategists who are thinking about and practicing how we relate, change, grow, and hold each other through changing conditions. Those columns have been abundant and divergent, representing a healthy ecosystem of ideas and practices. Emergent strategy is the only thing that makes sense to me right now. The Earth awaits our partnership, and we have to decentralize but move together to avoid the predation of this moment. We feel smaller, and we may be smaller, but we, the workers, the makers, the parents, the birthing bodies, and the Earthlings who want a future on Earth, are still the majority. We need a place to keep learning how to flock together. So, for our third iteration of the column, we are partnering with Movement Generation, MG, a group I worship. MG is a shepherding, a set of ideas that blow my mind every time I encounter them. I reference the organization often in conversation and interviews, and I included their Shocks, Slides, and Shifts framework in Emergent Strategy, Shaping Change, Changing Worlds. To me, MG feels like emergent strategy in action, and the thinkers who founded the organization were teachers in the soil of my own ahas about how the world works, what matters, and what we must do. MG taught me that eco comes from the Greek word oikos, which means home, and that home is what we always want to center, protect, and grow. That takes multiple forms. Ecosystem is all the relationships in our home. Ecology is what we know and understand about our home. Economy is not money or markets, but how we manage the resources of our home. And ecological justice, a state of balance between human communities and healthy ecosystems, is rooted in and flows from home. MG also taught me about the lag effect. Without realizing it, I had developed a short-term way of thinking about the impact of humans on Earth. But the lag effect framing helped me understand the cumulative effect of human behavior on our planet. Did you know it takes between 40 and 50 years to fully feel the effect of burning fossil fuels? Our Earth is experiencing the effect of the fossil fuels humans were burning in the 1980s. Consider how much fossil fuel has burned in the decades since then, a climate impact that will shape our next half century. Understanding this can give us a clearer picture of what is to come and how to take the right action. MG taught me that everything is precious. One of their beloved founders, Gopal Deyaneni, often tells the story about how he and his daughter would brush their teeth together so he could simultaneously teach her about the preciousness of every drop of water. I took that practice into my own life. MG helped me understand the true web of our interconnectedness. Our Earth isn't organized by the borders we have set up on top of it. Instead, Earth is a single living system operating as a spider's web, where all of us are connected and impact each other, and core webbing ties it all together. There is fragility and strength in all of this connection. Learning interconnectedness helped me understand there is no over there. There is no climate catastrophe that can actually be contained. If we hope to survive, then we have to think about how we cause impact and are impacted by others, and how we can protect the metasystems, air, water, soil, and energy that hold us all. MG's three circles of strategy helped me understand strategy in a way I could quickly use and apply. In this exercise, the three overlapping circles represent what we need, what's politically possible, and what are false solutions. So often, our political system will hear us articulate what we need and return with a false solution, claiming it is the only option that is politically possible. MG helped me understand that our work is never to settle for the false solutions, but to instead organize, exert pressure, and educate ourselves to make what we need politically possible. This has saved me so much time and helped me determine where to expend my own precious life force. This is just a taste of MG's incredible thinking and experimentation. The organization has also liberated land in the Bay Miwok territory of the San Francisco Bay Area and is building a justice and ecology center for communities to gather, deepen, and learn in part of a larger shift to return land to indigenous hands and those who will love and steward it. As we keep watching our government devolve, I am calling on MG to helm Murmurations in 2025 and offer a guide for how we can foster a just transition, even against the odds. Movement Generation, MG, is going to use this column to provide current ideas, frameworks, and practices that can help us navigate this storm. I am so excited to be their student again, and I am grateful for Yes Media letting us continue to iterate to make the best offer we can. We invite you to learn along with us, grow with us, and change with us. About the author, Adrienne Marie Brown is a writer, editor, activist, and social justice facilitator, coach, speaker, and doula. Her books include Emergent Strategy, Shaping Change, Changing Worlds, Pleasure Activism, The Politics of Feeling Good, which she wrote and edited, and Octavia's Brood, Science Fiction Stories from Social Justice Movements, which she co-edited. They are a Yes contributor and the creator of Yes's exclusive collective column, Murmurations. We're at the end of another time together. You have been tuned to Sun Sounds of Arizona, listening to excerpts from Yes Media. From Flagstaff, I'm your volunteer reader, Deborah McFadder. Thanks a lot for listening.